This is the SB Live Washington podcast, a weekly conversation about high school sports across the Evergreen State. I'm Andy Bueller, statewide preps reporter, and joining me, senior reporter, your pal and mine, Todd Millis, and analyst, former NBA player, host of the ISO with Dan Dickow. Dan Dickow joining us from an undisclosed remote location. Before we get going, have you ever seen the movie He Got Game? Spike Lee film from the 90s starring Ray Allen.
Yeah, when he was
Jesus Shuttlesworth.
Yeah. You know, if I did, I think I saw it in bits and pieces. It is a good movie. Yeah, I remember because Ray Allen, it was right before Ray Allen came to the Sonics.
Oh, is that right? Honestly, phenomenal acting job by him. He looked like an actor, not an athlete. But the reason I bring that up is I was watching it last week, and I couldn't help but think as the movie kind of walks through the life of Jesus Shuttlesworth, who is the in the movie, it's a fictional story, the number one recruit in the country. Every which way he turns, everybody's asking him, Jesus, Jesus, where are you going? What's next? Everybody wants a piece of Jesus. Last week, two of the top recruits in the class of 2021 in the state of Washington committed to Blue Blood schools. Paolo Banchero of O'Day, top three player in the country, and Nolan Hickman of Eastside Catholic, around the 30 to 50 range, somewhere in that realm, but you get the drift. I don't believe Paolo's ever seen that movie. I actually didn't ask Nolan, but I can imagine that they would relate to that character a ton. But huge news in the high school hoop scene while we're on month six of everything being shut down from a sports standpoint. In Washington, we get two of the biggest commits that we will cover all year. So Todd, to kick things off, these two commit suddenly within days of one another, Paolo to Duke, Nolan to Kentucky. Paolo becomes the second Duke player ever from the state of Washington. Nolan becomes, far as we know, the first from Kentucky, but if you know differently, please let us know. What was your reaction?
Well, let's just clarify. First boy, there's been some girls that have played at Duke, but...
Yes, thank you.
Even with the enormity of these two particular commitments just days apart and the both of them committing to Blue Bloods, I don't think we're surprised by this. I mean, I think this is what we were anticipating. We've known for a couple of years that this 2021 class of boys in football and in basketball had the potential to be one of Washington's historic classes in terms of talent, in terms of where they were going to go to college or the NBA developmental leagues or overseas. And it's playing out that way. Duke was a little bit of a surprise, but I mean, you think of who you get to play for, all the marketing opportunities. Look at the run of really marketable players that they've had here, especially recently. So if you're going to spend 1 year, and I assume it's going to be 1 year before he jumps to the NBA. You're going to spend 1 year at a program. Why not go to Duke? Why not go to something where it's a proven commodity? It's going to be on ESPN all the time. It's in a great basketball conference. I'm not saying that going to Kentucky or going to Tennessee or going to Gonzaga or even going to Washington, I know both his parents are Huskies, there wouldn't be perks to it. But I mean, right now, I mean, if you had a son, Andy, and he could go anywhere in the country, wouldn't Duke be at or near the top of your list? And I know you went to Gonzaga, but it would be difficult to pass up the lure of Duke. And you can see the same thing about Kentucky. I mean, look who he's going to go play for. I mean, if he wants to get better, John Calipari has a sterling reputation of developing players and not beating around the bush. He is a challenging coach to play for, but rewarding, a lot like Bob Huggins. I mean, he's two very different approaches, but and it sounds like he could be the first player from Washington to ever go to Kentucky, which is an amazing thing, given the fact that we've had boys that have gone to UConn, North Carolina, KU, all up and down the West Coast in the Pac-10, Pac-12. So yeah, it's on one hand, it's remarkable to see it play out, but at the other hand, this is the stuff we were forecasting a couple years ago, and we've got a couple players on the football side too that we're waiting to see where they might end up. I'm sure that we're going to see a couple blue blood football programs come into our view very, very soon as well.
Both announcements that came suddenly and within a couple days of each other. These, of course, are guys that have played basketball together since the third grade. Dan, when you saw the news, did it surprise you? And what was your reaction to kind of both guys choosing their choice?
No, it didn't surprise me, you know, because typically, even in a normal year, most of the higher recruited, highly ranked guys will begin to commit right after the July summer evaluation series, especially now that players can take official visits during their junior year. So that most guys, if they're being that highly recruited, already have pared their list down pretty well. They've gotten to know the staffs. They've probably been on all the campuses. Even though in the COVID era, yeah, things have definitely changed. So I'm not sure if those guys made campus visits at any point, but they had plenty of time to really get to know the staffs and what they wanted out of a college. You know, in regards to big picture stuff with two Washington high school products kind of committing to those type of schools, that's unbelievable. That's awesome. Shows you how good basketball is in the state of Washington. Banchero, I think, will be a great fit at Duke, you know, kind of that inside-outside kind of 3-4. And then, you know, Hickman going to Kentucky, maybe a little bit of a surprise, but, you know, when he had 36 in front of Calipari towards the end of last year, you knew that was probably an eye-opener for that staff. They do a tremendous job with guards, guys like Eric Bledsoe, guys like John Wall have been to the NBA. I think, you know, Hickman's obviously got a lot of potential, but he's got a lot of work to do to get to that level. But, you know, if Calipari and his staff see something in you, you know, that's a huge positive, and congrats to both those guys.
You know, Dan, I remember sitting on the baseline with you at Eastside Catholic when Eastside and O'Day played each other. And obviously Banchero was no secret. But the big takeaway from that game was, holy cow, this kid Nolan Hickman can really play. What is it about this game that makes you think that he will pan out at a Kentucky that produces great players every year?
Well, I think it's skill level. I mean, each time I saw him play, I was really impressed with his skill level, his ability to get where he wanted on the floor with his dribble. I think he's got good size. I think he's probably more athletic than a lot of people think. You know, and I think the fact is, when you look at a lot of these true blue blood schools, they have the, for lack of a better term, the pick of the litter, who they want. And, you know, the fact that it sounds like Calipari and his staff really focused in on something, shows you a lot. And I think some of the times those schools, who they're recruiting, maybe they go a little bit harder after one guy or the other because they fit the offensive structure or the culture a little bit more than another guy might. And so I'm guessing there was something that Calipari and his staff saw about Hickman that made them say, you know what, we got to get this guy. They put the full court press on, and to see him commit and will eventually sign there and play there, that's great. Congrats to him.
With Paolo, it's notable, I think, that Washington wasn't in his final consideration for schools staying in state, going to the school down the road that his, like you said, you know, his mom was a standout star. Rhonda Smith, now Banchero Smith, was a star at UW. Dad went to UW. Gonzaga was in the mix in that Final Four, from what I understand, and it just came down to Kentucky and Duke that last week with Paolo. And you're right. I mean, it seems like with Duke, you know, once you go there, I'm not saying this isn't the case with other schools, but Paolo could be a one and done type player. Obviously, as you know, I'm sure Dan will have more to say about. A lot has to pan out in order for that to happen. But the prospect of him going to college means that, you know, likely he won't be finishing his degree in a typical 4-year track. And so I think it was important for that family to choose somewhere that you'll be a family member for life. And Duke has really shown that and really shown a dedication to, you know, welcoming back their players, even the ones that just stay for a year. I mean, look at Zion Williamson. He was there for 1 year. He's synonymous with Duke. Obviously he's a once in a generation type player, but yeah, I think that message of, you know, being a part of the Duke family really stood out to Paolo. Now, one of the interesting parts about this whole thing is Paolo and Nolan have played basketball together since third grade. They played, they've known each other and been friends. Their recruiting journeys have been very different. Paolo has been a top level recruit for, you know, since his sophomore year. Nolan, when I talked to him around Christmas time at the Les Schwab Invitational, he had just come off a summer on the Nike EYBL circuit. He played and held his own at Peach Jam, which is the, you know, the preeminent basketball tournament across this country. And he, you know, he was still kind of getting offers from, you know, the Oregon States, you know, the, I believe Washington had offered him. And so he hadn't taken that next step into becoming a nationally relevant recruit until after this high school basketball season, when he really exploded onto the scene. We've talked about it on this podcast a lot. I wrote a big story about it in February. You know, Nolan, obviously, who, as we, I haven't even mentioned yet, he's transferring to Wasatch Academy in Utah for his senior season with the coronavirus pandemic and everything that's going on. But right after that, the high school season ended, he starts hearing from the Kentuckys, the UCLAs. I'm sorry, not Kentucky, Kansas, UCLA, eventually Kentucky. But the process for him, Arizona, really, really changed. And Kentucky came into the picture about a month ago, and they offered him. They scheduled a Zoom phone interview or a Zoom interview with him, with the whole entire coaching staff, and offered him, you know, pretty much on the spot, to when they had made contact. And Nolan wanted to make sure and keep it kind of under wraps. He didn't really want it to get out. He wanted to just kind of keep it within the family and decide with him and his folks and the people that he relies on and that, you know, has his ear. But Todd, you and I both know, and you especially, that Kentucky didn't learn about Nolan Hickman 1 month ago.
No. No, I mean, if you want to say that one amazing night in the Metro League tournament, one amazing performance in the Metro League tournament changed the course of his recruiting, you can make that case. I mean, I was there the night that John Calipari came, seeing, you know, assuming to come see Paolo. It was in the Metro League semifinals, O'Day, Eastside Catholic, and Paolo was fantastic. He had 31 points, I think. I mean, it's something around that. And he wasn't the best guy on the floor. I mean, Nolan Hickman was, I mean, and I'm a Nolan Hickman fan. I've liked him ever since I've watched him play as a ninth grader. So I've seen a lot of his career in pieces at Eastside Catholic. I just love the way he plays. And that night he was unguardable. You could have had eight guys trying to defend him. He was unguardable. And I talked to him after the game, and he knew Calipari was there. I think somebody had to point it out to him, but he knew Calipari was there. You could tell in the way he reacted to the, hey, you know, Calipari was here tonight. He kind of had this smirk. I think I had a video of that on with the story that I wrote. And you could just tell how, yeah, I'm on the radar. Yeah, John Calipari knows who I am. Yeah, he does. And he did. And obviously, John didn't forget it, because, you know, these guys, you know, in a roundabout way came back and into the picture. And it was pretty obvious, wanting to keep that secret, that he had an affinity toward Kentucky too. And why not? I mean, we're talking about two programs in a one and done sense that have done it and been as successful at developing one and dones as well as anybody in the country. And it's, you know, I don't think either one of us can blame either one of those young men picking the two universities that they did. And I expect both of them to have, you know, Paolo have a very really good abbreviated career at Duke and Nolan to have a pretty darn good career at Kentucky playing for John Calipari. Great fits. It was a very, very historic week for the state of Washington, you know, with those type of commitments in a short amount of time.
A couple months ago, Paulo had given his top six. And the schools that eventually he narrowed down to, like I said, were Tennessee, Kentucky, Duke, and Gonzaga. That eventually was narrowed down to Kentucky and Duke. And within the last couple of weeks, I spoke to Paulo's mom over the weekend, Rhonda Smith-Banchero. And you know, over the last couple of weeks, Paulo had kind of made up his mind on his own. And Duke and Kentucky were both looking for answers. And his parents said, you know, look, go in your room. You take your time, not with your phone. You put your phone away. Sit with your thoughts. And until you know that this is really, you know what you want, they tried to really remove themselves from the decision, which is something that I think a lot of, you know, it depends. Everybody's recruitment is different, but that was really a priority for them was, hey, this is his decision. You know, his mom said, the reality is that we're going to drop him off at school and then we're going to go back to our lives. And he's the one who's living with this decision. And I think it speaks highly to the programs that he, you know, had listed among his finalists that this decision was so hard for him in recent months. But when it came down to it, he went up to his mom and said, what should I do? And she said, let it fly. And he committed to Duke. So she had gone through that process too, when she was a you know, high school standout at Franklin. And so, you know, I'm sure that that's that situation from Paulo's perspective, having those types of parents in your corner is invaluable. Paulo joins a recruiting class that hasn't you know, fully shaped up yet at Duke, but AJ Griffin's a five-star from Archbishop Stepanak in New York. You know, it's similar kind of 6'7", 200, but another great athlete that he'll be paired up against or paired up with, I should say. Paulo could be a one and done. That's the type of recruit he is. That's how he projects. Is there anything about what about Duke's program do you think fits well with you know that potential with Paulo?
Well, I think when you look at Duke, I mean, they've had one of the top recruiting classes. Jeez, I think they've had a top three recruiting class each of the last 7 years. So they know what a one and done looks like. They know what these five stars look like. They know how to recruit them. Then they know how to, you know, utilize their talents for a short amount of time that they might be on campus. And there is a good chance that Paulo's there for a year. And if he is, congrats to him, nothing but the best of luck. But people have to understand that is an enormous undertaking and something things have to go very well for that to be the case. And I hope they do. But hopefully I hope he has a great college career before that. But you know, when you look at, you know, a program like Duke or Kentucky, where they're really getting the cream of the crop every single year with the five stars, those guys push each other in practice every single day. So, you know, there's the ability to really get better quickly, in a competitive environment.
Yeah, I like that a lot. That's a great perspective. You're right, Todd. A historic set of commitments across this state that we cover. Story coming on that'll kind of take a look at you know some of the behind the scenes of that commitment, both of those commitments, and the relationship of those two players who have gone head to head, who have played in the same team and done so for many years. So scorebooklive.com/Washington is where you will find that. Another story that we're really looking at, Todd, as you and I have kind of transitioned into covering Idaho high school football in the last couple weeks and are starting to roll out Idaho high school football coverage, entering what is the start of you know most teams' games this season. The football season will set underway on Friday in Idaho, and while Washington, Oregon, California sit idly with those state associations having postponed football to the spring. Idaho is one of the many states that's playing. You and I have taken a very hard look, and one of the very interesting little storylines that's come out of this Idaho season centers around a town that's right on the Idaho border. And that's the town of Colton. It's a farming community that's about 20 minutes away across on the other side of the border from a town called Genesee. Both of them play eight-man football. And before this season, a couple years out, Jim Marley, the AD at Colton, is looking at his school. It's obviously it's a very small school, and he's looking at it and he's saying, okay, I don't know that we're going to have a football team or enough kids to field a football team in a couple years. And that sort of forecasting has all played out into the six football players at Colton High School who are enrolled at Colton High School are playing high school football this fall for Genesee. Colton and Genesee are co-opting. And, you know, I think, Todd, you initially came across this story. I was the one that wrote it, but, you know, both of us obviously had our thumb on the pulse here. And how fascinating is it that while most of the state is not playing football, you have six eight-man football players in Washington that are going to go on with the season starting this Friday in front of fans?
Yeah, and I don't think that you and I looked at this as a way to kind of go nanny, nanny, boo-boo to the rest of the state. I mean, it's hard.
No,
for programs and for football players to be this, as you said, idle in the fall. And like the story says, you know, this is something set up long before the COVID hit this country. So, yeah, I mean, you know, when we were talking about Colton's got a rich tradition in football in the 70s. You know, Mick Dennehy was the coach for their state championships. You know, he's a big name in Montana Grizzly football as a longtime coach. Mike, all the Kramer boys, Mike Kramer played at Colton High School. Mike Kramer was a longtime coach at Eastern Washington and then ended up at Idaho State. I mean, it's a town that's produced. It's their sport up until this Colton girls basketball dynasty that came about here in the last 15 years. So, it would be sad for a tradition. A rich tradition sport like that to go under. So this was their option. You see this with farming communities in Eastern Washington. I know Idaho's combined with somebody in Montana as well. So, if it means that those towns get to play football by combining, great. And in this situation, it's good for those six Colton boys to be able to do that. I guess if you're a Pullman football player and you're kind of in your house kind of saying, hey, what am I going to do on a Friday night in September? You know, they got buddies, you know, it's Pullman's what, 18, 20 miles away. They can just drive down to Colton. They can drive down to Genesee and watch them play. Same thing with some players from Clarkston. It's on the way. It's in between Pullman and Clarkston. So those guys have a chance to go watch their buddies play. But other than that, you know, I mean, It's unfortunate that this is the only program that we get to sort of track. And like you said, we've transitioned a little bit into Idaho football, and that's been a learning experience. But make no mistake, we would love to be doing Washington high school football preview stuff right now and taking care of the teams that we cover on a more consistent basis.
Oh, no question. No question. And it's more so, like you said, you know, this story and the reason we wrote it was just how much of a coincidence it all really was. Cause you know, if the co-opt hadn't have happened, then these Colton kids not only would, be looking at obviously with the coronavirus pandemic, no football season, they wouldn't even have a football season in the spring. There's not enough players to field a team. And so just by some stroke of, this is such a happenstance situation. But an interesting one at that. That story is also on the site right now, scorebooklive.com/Washington. It's your leader for high school sports news, features, highlights, all the above. Across this state, we're keeping it churning throughout this coronavirus pandemic, as well as this podcast, which you can subscribe to on wherever you get your podcasts. But if you do so on Apple Podcasts, be sure to leave us a review, a rating. It helps us do what we do. Tell us what you like about what we do. Tell us what you don't like. That's okay with me. Might not be okay with Todd. It's okay with me.
It's always okay with me. Come on. And happy National Dog Day. I've got my dog here near us as we tape our podcast this week. I mean, Andy, why don't you break to our listeners the good news that's happened in the Buehler family with the four-legged friend department.
Well, nobody's asking for us to release the Zoom footage of these interviews. Nobody needs to see our faces more than they already do. But those who aren't doing so don't get to see Conan. You're absolute king of a dog who tends to make an appearance on these podcasts, on conference calls, all of the above. But yeah, my folks got a quarantine puppy. And so her name is Reggie. She's very small. She's full of energy. And it's been a welcome addition to the extended Buehler universe as we navigate this pandemic. It feels like it's definitely keeping all of us busy, myself included. Everybody has started to pitch in, and we're all going home more, so that's exciting.
Families with dogs are usually happy families, as I've grown to learn.
Right before this phone call, or right before this podcast recording, I had to clean up some vomit from that dog. So it's not all rosy, but if you look at it with rose-tinted spectacles, she's a great little dog. So, and a cherished new member of the family. So our pal Dan Dickow has prepared something that I think any high school basketball fan in this state is going to appreciate. It's an interview with former Decatur standout Quincy Wilder. And Todd, you haven't heard it yet. It published today on the on his podcast, The ISO with Dan Dickow, which you can get anywhere you get podcasts. It's a 3 times a week interview podcast. We talk about it all the time here. Dan brings it. He's been bringing it, and this is no exception. But this interview that he did has a special resemblance and a special significance to high school sports fans across the state of Washington, people who care about basketball, and honestly, those who don't. I mean, Quincy Wilder is a fantastic story. He was once a heralded recruit. As you know, Todd, one of the better pure talents to come out of this state. His career in basketball and in life was derailed for years by legal issues, a couple stints in prison. Now he's out, and he wants others to learn from his story. Dan, it's been a couple weeks since you've talked to Quincy. What were your biggest takeaways from that interview, and was there anything that surprised you? I was just so impressed by it, you know, the depth and that you guys went to, and just, you know, where he's at now in life seems like, you know, he's in a place to help others.
Yeah, you know, Quincy's such an interesting story, and he's a guy that, quite frankly, myself and a lot of other guys have lost touch with. You know, he was a year older than me in high school. I played against him many times in AAU settings, summer leagues, fall leagues, whatever it is. And he, I'm not kidding, is probably the most talented guard I've played against in the state of Washington when I was growing up. Unfortunately for him, he ran into, you know, not being able to qualify coming out of high school, and then, you know, going to a community college and dominating with Brian Scalabrine at Highline, and then, you know, getting to USC and things not being, I don't want to say as easy for him as maybe he would have thought, but they didn't go smoothly. And then he had transferred to Boise State, and he's kind of owned up to the mistakes that he made and basically said, you know, I made bad mistakes, and he's paid for them and he's learned from them. And what I was really unaware of was the piece of the story when he had spent a long time in prison that, you know, he didn't blame others. He took the onus. He took it on the fact that he was the one that made the mistakes, and that he wanted to improve himself and learn from those mistakes and then help others when he got the chance. And he's now doing that. He's doing some training stuff in the Seattle area, and he's become, from everything I've heard from others, is, you know, he's really given back, and he's really trying to help people stay away from some of the mistakes that he had made in the past.
I'm going to play a snippet of that story now. If you want the full interview, like I said, it's fantastic, and it's published on The ISO with Dan Dickow. So go to wherever you get your podcast to find it. You can find it in the show notes. But before we play that, Todd, what do you know about Quincy Wilder?
Best defensive high school basketball player I've ever seen in the state of Washington. He is brutally ferocious. I watched him literally against good point guards not allow him to cross midcourt when a game was on the line. I mean, he was a physical, tenacious defender. If he was a – if he had a consistent shot, if he had the Dan Dickow shot, he'd have been a top recruit nationally. And he did pretty darn well without it, going to Highline and USC and one of the best basketball players to come out of the Seattle-Tacoma area, no doubt about it.
No question. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, a small snippet of Dan Dickow's interview originally aired on the ISO with Dan Dickow. It's him and Quincy Wilder. Stick with us.
This podcast is brought to you by Washington Federal. Washington Federal is a local bank and portfolio lender with more than 200 branches across 8 states, more than 32,000 fee-free ATMs, 24/7 online and mobile banking with drive-up ATMs. And Washington Federal is a proud sponsor of Scorebook Live. They care deeply about high school sports and the communities that support them across the entire state of Washington. Head to WFDBank.com to learn how they can help you meet your financial goals. That's WAFDBank.com. Washington Federal, a neighbor you can count on. We hope everybody's staying safe and healthy. We're just as excited for high school sports to return as you are.
Every young person kind of has a growing curve to their life. There's adversity that they come through. And I know you've been very open about some of the things that occurred in your playing career. There was a really good article on theathletic.com about some of the things that you decisions that you made and how you learned from them. Before we started recording this conversation, you know, you essentially told me, hey, look, I'm an open book. I want to help people. I made some mistakes, but I've learned from my mistakes. I'm currently writing a book. If you can quickly go into detail for people maybe that don't really necessarily know the story, you went from USC to Boise State and a couple things, you know, happened that kind of put you on a different path than maybe you would hope to be, but you have absolutely righted, you've learned from them and you've turned things around. Can you share with us?
Yeah. So, man, so between my, USC Boise State, when I was at Boise State, I got incarcerated, for robbery assault at Boise State. So I set out a year there. You know, and it was the first time in my life, man, to where, like I said, I in my mind, I trained, you know, like a pro. You know, they gave me everything, keys to the gym, lowering the basket, shoot away. And so it was the first time in my life where just being on my own and being able to figure out, you know, how this game of basketball works and how I'm going to make it, you know. And so I was in the best shape of my life, man, the best that I've ever been. And just going to camps, you know, with Tim Gergerich and, you know, all these other NBA coaches there. And they told my coach, man, they told Ed Boyce, he was at Boise State, and they told him, I said, man, just, you know, as long as he stays cool, man, he's going to get a shot. You know what I mean? And that right there, man, like I said, that meant a lot to me. You know what I mean? Because I worked on my game after leaving SC, man. I wanted to prove to everybody, you know, that, okay, well, I'm going to come in, I'm average about 25, and everything's going to be, you know, back to normal. And, man, I got into a little altercation back at home in Washington over on a – was it in the summer? I think it was in summer when I came home from Boise State, man, and I got charged with a robbery assault. And instead of going to trial, man, I took the deal, you know what I mean? Because I was at fault. You know what I mean? I was at fault, running around drinking, you know, smoking. And like I said, got into a situation. And next thing you know, I'm locked up for a robbery assault, man. I had to do a year and a day. So I ended up doing like 11 months between Shelton and Stafford Creek, you know. And like I said, 11 months isn't that long of a time, but it still gives you that, you know, that red flag now. You know what I mean? It gives you that red flag now, man. And to me, I still knew that I would be able to play because the time wasn't that long, but the red flag, now people aren't going to give you the same chance. So, They wanted me basically to start over from the bottom, you know? And so I went to prison, did my 11 months. I got so much mail from people, you know, support. And that kept me going, you know what I mean, through the times. But like I said, it wasn't that long of a time for me. So when I got out of there, my mindset kind of changed to where now I got to prove myself over again. So I was getting with these coaches and there's, oh, well, you know, we don't know if he can still play. And I'm like, look, I was only gone for 11 months. You know what I mean? And so when I got out of there, it just, my mindset changed as far as how basketball was. I was more angry at coaches and at basketball, even though a coach did give me another shot at Evergreen State and I played well there, but I was still, my mindset was different toward the game of basketball. I played it, but I was mad at it, you know?
You know, that's one of the things that a lot of people go through, different things, and sometimes people view what had happened as a bigger negative than maybe it is. Now, you're now in a position where you're coaching young kids and you're mentoring young kids. What do you try to take away from your career, your experiences, to help impart knowledge, impart wisdom and experience to these kids to help them be the best person that they can be?
Yeah. I mean, the main thing, man, is, you know, just stay focused, keep your circle small, you know what I mean? And if I had, you know, somebody, you know, telling me the things that I know now, you know, outcome may have been different, you know what I mean? But, you know, focus more on your goal. Don't worry about things you can't control. You know what I mean? If you're playing, focus on your craft, you know what I mean? And that's all you need to be concerned about. You know, because nobody can stop you but you. You know, that's it. You know what I mean? And when I was in high school, there was a guy that told me, and I don't even know why he said it, and I don't know. It didn't make sense to me until I was locked up the second time. And he said to me, he said, it won't be talent why you don't make it. He said, it won't be talent. And so back then, I was, oh, yeah, you know, it might have been, it was a fan or something. Okay, cool, whatever. You know, I'm not listening to it. But years and years later, it hit me, you know, and why he said that, man. So when I talk to these kids, man, I talk to them from experience, man. I try to get into some of these juvenile detention centers and deal with these kids and talk to them. That's a whole other conversation that I'm still trying to work on. But man, it's just, yeah, just keep your goal, man, and write down your goals. You know what I mean? I write everything down, man. I write everything down now. You know, I got a passion planner. I write down my goals, where I want to do in a year, 5 years. I write it all down. And so for the young kids that I train, high school, college, I tell them to get these goals and stick them somewhere where you can see them every day. You know what I mean? Don't put them in a book. You know what I mean? But whatever your goals is, 25 points, get to college, whatever it is, put it on the bottom of your bed or on the window so you pass it every day. And now it's just becoming second nature. So if I ask you, well, what are your goals? Oh, man, it's 25, getting to college and doing this. But if you put it in a book, you might be like, well, I think it was, you know, these three things. So and that's another thing that I talk to the kids about, is just writing everything down, man. Write down your goals and dreams. And if you believe it, you can achieve it. And that is just, that's the God's honest truth, man.
Thanks for listening to today's episode. Subscribe to the SB Live Washington podcast wherever you get your podcasts. And while you're there, give us an honest rating and review. It helps us do what we do. For SB Live Sports, we'll be back next week.